Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
The following content is not suitable for children.
Today we're talking about some of the roadblocks, the tough spots to making progress in the school of love.
These are the tough ones, the tough problems.
We're going to talk about four things that really do stop progress or stop people from feeling safe and feeling like they could really strengthen that emotional bond, because these things, they can rob a relationship of its safety.
Absolutely. Welcome to Foreplay Sex Therapy. I'm Dr. Lori Watson, your sex therapist.
And I'm George Fowler, your couples therapist.
We are here to talk about sex.
Our mission is to help couples talk about sex in ways that incorporate their body, their mind, and their hearts.
And we have a little bit of fun doing it, right, G?
Listen, and let's change some relationships.
So, George, what are these things? Tell us some of the bad scenarios that people are really dealing with and are up against.
We talk about in therapy the three A's. If there's some kind of abuse happening, some kind of addiction happening, or there's an affair going on, these things are certainly going to get in the way of safety. And the fourth one is if somebody's just not willing to risk anymore, they're not willing to engage or to make effort, it's hard to make progress. So let's break these down, you know, in a little bit more detail. Let's start off with the abuse, right? If somebody's, you know, you're in a relationship where somebody's emotionally or physically or sexually abusive, it's hard to trust. I mean, abuse robs trust, right? Somebody's using power to kind of get what they want at the costs, and they're not willing to look at the impact of what their actions are doing to their partner. The worst thing to me isn't the abuse. It's after the abuse where you just don't feel safe.
Yeah. I mean, the three A's, abuse, addiction, and affairs, these are relationship blockers and stoppers. And like you said, sometimes people have given up, you know, and they have really said, you know, for them, the relationship has died. We sometimes think about burnt out pursuers, but there's withdrawers too who are tapping out. And those kinds of places, it's really difficult to take all these risks that we've been talking about in the school of love to share with each other that, you know, that's not even going to happen, you know, because you got to take care of these things first. So abuse, like you said, is, you know, physical or sexual or emotional, and people are using their power over somebody else. And when that happens, trust is destroyed and it's not safe. And so first thing, you got to be safe.
You need safety. That's a prerequisite. And listen, people make mistakes and lose their cool. And if they're willing to take ownership for that, then this we can do beautiful work. It's just if people are not willing to take ownership. If like I'm gonna hit my wife and I'm gonna say, well, actually it's her problem because she was disrespectful, and I'm not gonna look at the impact of what I'm doing, then there's not really a lot of safety to want to share and to have kind of conversations. So really that ability to take ownership.
Not a lot of safety for sure.
It's tough. You know, and a lot of us grow up in families where we've been abused, and we see the intergenerational kind of passing on of this thing that just continues to happen. And somebody's got to have the courage to stop these cycles of violence, right? And be willing to say, like, if I'm going to encourage you to take a risk and that risk might be used against you later, it's really hard for your body to want to take the risk. You know, you have to have that safety net that says, you know, we might hear uncomfortable things, but that's not going to be used against me later. And you need both people to buy into that process to make the progress that we're talking about.
Right. And so you're talking really about now emotional safety too. Yeah. You know, we can't have somebody who's going to manipulate us or use against us our vulnerability. That is abusive. And so it's, you know, things that people get into, all kinds of things, name calling and, you know, threats and, I mean, there's a lot of ways to be emotionally abusive, but we kind of have some boundaries around that. In therapy, you know, we put a lot of boundaries around this.
Exactly.
And sexual abuse. Talk about that. Like how in a marriage can there be sexual abuse? This people don't think there can be. Some people don't think there can be. I, of course, do, but.
Yeah, listen, we're big fans of when you say no, you have a right to know it's your body, right? You know, somebody just can't override what your rights are as a person. And again, none of us are perfect and all of us make mistakes. I'm not looking for perfection to do therapy. All I'm looking for is for people, if they hear from their partner, you did something that hurt me, they take ownership and they want to work on changing that. If they're not motivated to change that, if they feel entitled to keep doing this behavior that doesn't feel safe, this is going to come to a halt and stop.
Yeah,
exactly. So like you said, in therapy, we have these boundaries, put these rules in place to create safety. And if couples are not following them, then we're going to not work with them. So for you all listening, if you find yourself in a relationship with somebody, this is tough, but at least we want to normalize. You're not crazy. I mean, it's hard to want to take risks. If those risks are going to be used against you, then you're going to need some help here.
Yeah. And we feel hopeful about many very, very difficult situations, but that doesn't mean that we think you should be putting up with those things or staying yourself. You know, sometimes, especially I think with physical violence, you need to get separate so that you, your children are physically safe. Same with sexual abuse. You know, if your partner is taking advantage of you sexually with force, that's craziness. You know, yeah, so
you see a lot of gaslighting here. Not only are you being abused, but you're kind of get blamed for the abuse. It's kind of your fault. Right. And when you find yourself in that cycle of violence, I mean, that you do need that those boundaries are the perfect word. You know, you deserve better. We all deserve, you know, our own personal integrity to be honored and
respect. And yeah, that's absolutely.
Happening. And then we're going to need some, we're going to have to take some steps before we can do the rest of this work that we're talking about in this school of love.
Yep. Yeah. So get yourself safe for sure.
Get yourself safe. Affairs is another one. You know, affairs, if you're turning towards someone outside the relationship for support, for comfort, for reassurance, right?
For sex,
for whatever you're turning towards, you know, that's certainly going to become an obstacle between working on each other and shrinking the distance that's happening. So, you know, if you're called off an affair, and we work with this all the time, half of the couples I work with are recovering some type of affair, and this school of love is perfect for that, right? Helping people and the opportunity to recover after affairs, to learn to know yourself and each other in a way you've never had. I can't tell you how many couples feel, you know, afterwards the work, they feel like they're stronger than they ever were before the affair, right? So we work with that all the time. But if somebody's not willing to call off the affair, if they continue to just, well, I'm not really sure I want to do both. And like that really is going to stop their ability to take any kind of risks.
Yeah. I think one of the huge difficulties in affairs are that the person that you are trusting also often lies about it. Mm-hmm. You know, so when there's that discovery process, they maybe don't tell the whole story or they don't tell it at all. And the other person discovers it. And that's just like, ugh, you know, that lying and affairs often go together. So it's really a tough thing because you expect your attachment figure, this person you depend on with your heart and your soul and your body, you know, to tell you the truth. And when they're saying something else and then you figure it out, it's like an earthquake. It's like an earthquake to kind of manage to go through that. People tell me all the time, Lori, I got lost on the way to the grocery store. I'm like, yeah, it was like an earthquake. You can't even think straight when the person that you love is lying to you and, you know, your whole world is turned upside down. So we get that.
Yeah, it's a good image. It doesn't just unravel the trust in that relationship. It shatters your worldview. It's like things you assume to be true. Everything unravels, like your whole 25 years of marriage then is a lie. You know, having your children and how you raise them, all of a sudden it's no longer the same way. I mean, your future, it's just the ripple effect of an affair is pretty profound. And that's why we're wanting the affair partner. There's always two things we're looking for as therapists that, you know, one, they take responsibility for the betrayal. And they're, you know, they're taking ownership and they're doing what they need to repair trust. And that's super important. That's where we start. But the second part, which can be a bit challenging, is getting both partners to see that the state of their relationship and the distance and the negative cycle always makes one partner more susceptible to something like this happening. And like, you can't get so focused on the affair that you don't see the bigger picture that says you got to get strength in your relationship. You know, we're going to try to do that through repairing the affair, but there's more than just the affair here that needs to be addressed.
Absolutely. I mean, when the affair is first discovered, of course, the person who is injured is kind of they're the first patient, you know, they're bleeding out. And so we got to help them. But, you know, as we process affairs, we do find out oftentimes the fabric of the relationship has been damaged in many ways. And yeah, this person acted out, but it, you know, affairs don't happen in a vacuum. Yeah. They happen in relationships that sometimes there are problems and people make decisions that they just kind of feel like this is the only thing I've got. You know, I was sitting with a client and he had had an affair. And as we talked about it, you know, she said, I asked about how their life had been and how their intimate connection had been over time. And turned out they had not had sex in 5 years. Mm-hmm. And I'm not excusing the acting out. I mean, that should have been done with integrity and honesty, you know, end the marriage then, you know, if you're out, tap out. But on the other hand, there was a part that he was saying, look, I've said it a million times. I need to be sexual. I am a sexual creature. And, you know, and she refused to engage with me and I didn't know any other way. And this woman paid me attention and I succumbed. And I'm not saying that that's right, but it is. I mean, I think both parties have to kind of take responsibility for what was happening between us when this vulnerability came. And George, you and I know, and we teach this and we preach this, that the sexual connection has to be secure. And if not, people are at risk for sort of infidelity and the attention of others.
Yeah.
That is a truth.
And again, we're just highlighting that point that you breaking your vows, we're not giving it permission. You got to take ownership for the betrayal. And it is a betrayal that devastates that partner's world. And we know how trust is a process of you earn over time. It's not a choice to just say, I'm going to start trusting you again. And I do know with 100-degree certainty that the person who's betrayed, when they look in their partner's eyes and they see reflected back their pain, they can see their partner feeling their pain, like their body starts to trust again. So there's a really clear map on how to get people into a much safer place. But both people have to do their work. And all we're making space for is this affair doesn't happen in a vacuum. That there is work, there's dynamics between the two partners that also need to kind of shine some light into. Because we need to make progress for both people to feel safe. Both people always create a negative cycle. And both people are needed to change that into a positive cycle. So we're going to do healing, affair work. And we're going to do that in the context of also working with the couple's dynamics. And, you know, the combination of those two, you know, gives couples a really good map on how to get back into a place of safety.
You know, I think if a couple has had an affair, I really think they need therapy.
Yeah.
You know, so get yourself to an EFT therapist. That's iceft.com, iceeft.com. There's a database there, find a therapist, and they're all over the world. But, you know, you can search by state, by city, and you can find an experienced therapist who understands attachment repair, because an affair tears the fabric of our very attachment to our partners. So,
all right, let's come back, pick this up.
Hi, y'all. Come join me in the windy city of Chicago. Chicago EFT is putting on my training, Sex in the Cycle, on May 10th. We'll discuss the importance of sexual attachment, the strategies of sexual pursuers and withdrawers, the negative sexual cycle, moving toward resolving sexual conflict, and 5 common sexual dysfunctions. This is for therapists. Register at chicagoeft.com.
Addie.
Ladies, did you know that one of the most common complaints from women about their sexual health is a frustrating low libido? Our sex drives can decline, but it's also treatable. Addy, or flibanserin, is FDA approved and has been clinically proven to increase sexual desire in certain premenopausal women who are bothered by a low libido. So if you feel like you've lost your desire and you want to get it back, stop falling for the snake oils and ask your doctor about Addy today. Go to Addy.com. That's ADDYI.
Addy is for premenopausal women with acquired generalized hypoactive sexual desire disorder, HSDD, who have not had problems with low sexual desire in the past, who have low sexual desire no matter the type of sexual activity, the situation, or the sexual partner. The low sexual desire is troubling to them and is not due to a medical or mental health problem, problems in the relationship, or medicine or other drug use. Addy is not for use in men or to enhance sexual performance. Your risk of severe low blood pressure and fainting is increased if you drink 1 to 2 standard alcoholic drinks close in time to your Addy dose. Wait at least 2 hours after drinking before taking Addy at bedtime. Your risk of severe low blood pressure and fainting is also increased if you take certain prescriptions, over-the-counter or herbal medications, or have liver problems. Low blood pressure and fainting can happen when you take Addy even if you don't drink alcohol or take other medicines. Do not take if you are allergic to any of the ingredients in Addy. Allergic reactions may include hives, itching or trouble breathing. Sleepiness, sometimes serious, can occur. Common side effects include dizziness, nausea, tiredness, difficulty falling asleep or staying asleep, and dry mouth. See full PI and medication guide, including box warning, at Addy.com/PI or call 844-PINK-PILL.
Go to Addy.com and use the code Foreplay for a $10 telemedicine appointment to find out if Addy is right for you. It's almost summer, and don't you love to be touched and caressed all over? Well, Foreus massage oil can make everywhere on your body in an erogenous zone. People may not think they need extra help in the bedroom, but really, you will be pleasantly surprised how much better and more pleasurable your sex life can be. With Foreus Intimacy Massage Oil, spice things up by slowing it down and take your partner intimacy to the next level with quick absorbing, desire enhancing, and all natural moisture. They also have arousal oil to have the best orgasm and sex you've ever had. Awaken uses CBD oil and warming sensation inducing organic botanicals. Basically, Awaken oil turns you on. So I fully endorse you to go ahead and treat yourself and your partner and experience your juiciest, deepest sensual experiences with a bottle of Foreus. Foreus is offering our Foreplay fam a special deal. Get 20% off your first order by visiting Foreus.com/foreplay or use the code Foreplay at checkout. That's F-O-R-I-A wellness.com/foreplay for 20% off your first order. I recommend trying their new massage oil combined with their Awaken Arousal Oil. You'll thank me later.
All right, so continue with affairs. That when both people are taking ownership and addressing their dynamics, and we have so much success, the School of Love is going to help you to strengthen that emotional and sexual cycle, right? But if the partner who is in the affair is not willing to accept responsibility, is blaming you for all the problems, is not calling off the affair, you know, then this is a competing attack.
Bad sign.
They're going somewhere else. There isn't a safety you're going to need for these vulnerable conversations to really bare your soul and hand over your heart. You know, it's not going to happen with somebody who's not really sure they want to be in it with you, or they're going somewhere else. So, you know, this isn't the time for some of these conversations.
You know, one of the things that I think is important in affair recovery is the sense of accountability. Like, the person who cheated should say, here's my phone, here are all my passwords, here's where I'm going, this is my schedule, this is where I'm going to be, you can come down and see me at the office anytime you want. Like, they really open up. And I think that the person who was injured, on the other hand, you know, that they become vigilant, they want to check the phone, they want to do all this, and the best case scenario when trust starts to be renewed is the person who stepped out opens up, and the person who was left and betrayed doesn't feel the need anymore to be vigilant and keep checking. You know, it's like both of those things is the sense of trust is being restored.
Yeah, let's face it. I mean, if you're the offender, you want to just say, I'm sorry. And can we move
get
on
it over with
the past, right? Can we just turn the
page?
But trust isn't earned that way. So Laura's 100% right that when you're willing to face, you know, your partner's fears, like, they're not responsible for these triggers. I mean, they think, oh, maybe there was a message. Let me check the phone. When you don't feel controlled or threatened by that, you say, hey, my partner's just scared. I want to build trust. This is actually an opportunity. Yeah, I'm going to feel bad. I'm going to be reminded of something I don't like and how I hurt my partner. But trying to avoid that feeling means you're going to destine your partner to face it alone. When you seize the opportunity, right. You say, I want to face that with you. You see how quickly you start to build that trust.
Exactly.
Well, I just want to add one other little scary, but often inconvenient. I mean, a lot of times the offender does build a bond with the affair partner, right? And even though you call it off, there's a loss to that, right? There's pain in losing somebody. I mean, it's really powerful when two people are kind of in sin with each other. Like they don't judge each other. Like they've accepted that this is where life has them. So there is something strong that develops. And, research says it's at least 6 months, there's like a mourning period. So you also got to kind of give the space for the offender to kind of, even though you don't want to hear that, that's the reality. Like, even though they made a mistake and they're calling that off, they're still in pain. Should they face that alone? I mean, I just think there's a lot of opportunity for both partners to show up in ways that they've probably never done before.
Yeah. And I know you're speaking the truth, but you're really asking a lot, right? Because that's the worst thing to think about is my partner formed a bond, fell in love, all this with somebody else. And now you want me to comfort them as they mourn that loss. Are you freaking kidding? I think this, we're not saying you have to do that on day one. We know that affair recovery is a process. And also I think, an affair is a dopamine hit. I mean, all its whole focus is on excitement and building sexual connection. I mean, people put so much time, energy, and money into an affair. I mean, their whole body and soul is moving in one direction to this super, super high, and then coming back into real life, it's like, oh, I got to come back into the middle road, the grind, really? Now my life without that kind of super hit. Yeah. It's hard.
Yeah, I like the saying, the affair partner only gets 10% of your time, but 90% of your engagement when they got that time. And partner at home gets 90% of your time, but only gets 10% of your engagement, right? Those are just not great numbers. And so, yes, that the timing has to be right. But I always ask when the timing is right to the offended person who's hurt, who don't want to be there because they're hurt. But if you're not going to be there, what's the option? You're going to invite this person to deal with their pain on their own. When they deal with their pain on their own, that is exactly the environment that makes affairs more likely to happen. When couples learn how to show up for each other in their pain, that is what battle tests a relationship. People being isolated with their pain is what creates distance in a relationship. So I know it's not fair and the time is not great, but when you could actually crawl over glass and love your partner in places they don't love themselves, like that creates a level of security that takes your relationship to a whole nother level. So again, we'll do other episodes fully on repairs, but we really just want to kind of help you recognize that if you're in the midst of one of these and you're struggling, the school of love can really help you. But if your partner is not willing to own it and still continuing to see other person, like this is not going to be the right time for the school of love.
This is too much vulnerability. You're just going to,
there's someone else in the picture we're not working with. So, all right, last one, addictions. We're bonding creatures. Sometimes our partner bonds elsewhere, right? They turn towards a drug or they turn towards,
Alcohol
or something, or pornography, like they're invested
in gambling,
crimes of threat when they're feeling disconnected. Like this is a way of kind of numbing out and escaping and getting some relief, but they're going elsewhere. Again, another type of competing attachment. A lot of people in addictions, it feels like an affair.
It is an affair. I mean, it's like you said, they are consumed by something else. I think about addictions, George, from an attachment perspective. And an addiction really to me is this hole in the soul. It's a person who needs and is missing the connection, whether it's connection of the other or a sense of goodness that people get, connection with God. I mean, there's an emptiness inside that then they're turning to something else, a substance or a process addiction, and they're trying to fill this frantically, this empty place. And we know that the opposite of addiction is really connection. It's not just stopping behavior. That's why AA works. I don't think AA works because it's some sort of magic. It works because people are connecting on a really deep level with other people. They're sharing their vulnerability. It might be the first time people who were addicted to alcohol have ever heard other people share about their heart. You know, I think that's what the magic is in AA or any of the Al-Anon and all of that, is people share at a deep level and they find connection finally. You know, it fills up their soul in a new way that the addiction was trying to do.
Amen. I couldn't agree more. I mean, to see addictions as a crisis of connection, when you're massively disconnected, turning towards something for relief makes a lot of sense for a short-term solution. But that short-term solution just continues to drive more and more disconnection and isolation. And that's why I always love that Irish saying, everybody focuses on the drinking and not the thirst. Everybody right. wants to stop the behavior, but doesn't understand that it's filling something. Like, you got to fill that hole in a healthier way if you want people to let go of the addiction. And that's what AA does a beautiful job with. But again, in this model, if the person is willing to seek help and is able to face the pain of their disconnection, it, like, this works great. The school of love is going to take you to another level. But if that addicted partner is not willing to seek help, is saying, I don't have a problem, you have the problem. If they're refusing to engage, then this is again what robs the couple of safety. Because that thirst, they don't want to lose the help that the alcohol maybe has given them to loosen up and lower their inhibitions, and they like how they feel. The idea of living without it is too hard for them. They just refuse to look at it and put it all on you as the problem. And now this is a competing attachment. Like, when you want to get close, they turn and have a second drink, right? And
yeah,
you
exactly.
want to make love afterwards. And you're like, it's like you have a third partner in the bedroom with you. And that's not okay. I mean, it's if my rule of thumb, if one partner thinks it's a problem, it is a problem. It needs to be addressed.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And let's speak for a minute about, like, compulsive sexuality and porn addiction and things like that, because I think sometimes that does become a process addiction. And, you know, I have people who come in and say, my partner's addicted to porn, and it's really only because they thought about wanting to use porn. They're actually not even using it, and their partner thinks they're an addict. So, I mean, there's degrees here, but I think
labels.
Yeah. So we're not talking about that. We're talking about probably a person who pornography is interfering with their relationships and with their work. You know, like, somehow or another, the desire to look at porn, they're wasting lots and lots of time with it, could be used productively, or maybe it is really interfering with their relationship. They would rather fantasize and, you know, masturbate to an image than they would have sex with their partner, or, you know, even be engaged with their partner.
Yeah, I'm always surprised. I shouldn't be after all this time, but, you know, with couples, if a man is masturbating to pornography and I say, let's do an experiment, just can you try not to do it for 2 weeks or a month and see what happens? Almost universally, their sex drive for their partner increases when they're not masturbating to pornography. So it is, you can see the competing attachment. It's easier. There's no pressure. You don't have to worry about things not working. You can get the stimulation level you want. You can keep changing the imagery. I mean, we can see, like a drug, it gives you an immediate payoff, right? So I think the intent is healthy. You want a good feeling, but the impact of that, I think so often people are missing with addiction.
Exactly. And I, you know, this is because I think we specialize in sexuality. I think that we often, you know, see this in our work, and I have, again, a lot of hope that people can fill up. Like, maybe I don't think it's always they're using porn because their partner didn't want to have sex with them. Sometimes they're using porn to really fill that empty place inside. It has nothing to do with their partner's sexual availability. So, you know, but we think you can get help.
As, you know, we're introducing abuse and affairs and addictions, you know, and this last one is just this not willing to risk, not willing to try, right? I mean, you can't bridge distance if you're not going to try something new. Sometimes people are so set in their ways and so set in their defenses that they just don't need to risk anymore. Like, it's, they're not going to be safe to take these risks to make the progress that you need to.
Yeah. You know, like we talked about earlier, there's also the situation where both people won't risk, right? When the lights aren't on anymore for either one of them and they are tapped out. And that situation, sometimes, you know, we can't restart. We have a lot of hope for helping you, but, you know, and like that new Billy Joel song, right? That turn the lights back on. I think that there is hope for that. And we have hope for all of these issues for healing. But if you're with a partner who will not engage with you, who is using a substance or having an affair or abusive in some way, that this is untenable, we're not asking you to continue to take risks. You know, you need to deal with those things first. But again, get yourself to a therapist. Find out if there is anything left, any hope, and that you can maybe turn the lights back on. So,
yeah, sometimes negative cycles win. And sometimes the distance gets too great. The research is really clear that eventually it's going to reach the point of no return where one partner just isn't willing to risk anymore. And most people we work with are getting close to that, but there's still something left. And then we tap into that and great things could happen. But if you find yourself in a relationship where somebody's not willing to risk, then yes, this is going to block this whole process. And you really need to get the help and the support you need to, because at the end of the day, we're big proponents that all of us deserve to feel safe and to feel connected and to be wanted. And, you know, to be in a relationship where that's not happening, I think that's some of the loneliest places on this planet.
So it is. Absolutely.
You find yourself there, you're in a tough spot, get the help you need.
Yep. Thanks, y'all, for listening.
Keep grinding away, baby.
Okay, so tell us about your cutting-edge training that you're doing on success and vulnerability.
Lori, we just keep pushing it, coming up with a new module on the playbook of a pursuer, playbook of a withdrawer, really practical moment-by-moment moves of what a therapist can use. You know, we're so focused on what's happening in session. Enough there's talk about theories and these global things. I think most therapists are looking for, what do I do in this moment? Give me a tool, George. So that's what we're trying to do.
That's awesome. I am so glad you guys are doing this work. I think it helps us be organized to see you do it. You do demos, you do explanations, teaching. It really is interactive. And I think that so many trainings that we sit through don't give us an opportunity for that. So what you're doing is really important.
No, we try to emphasize the teach it, show it, do it model of learning. You need to have some ideas, so we try to teach those. And then we try to show what it looks like implementing those ideas. But most importantly, you now got to practice it. That's how they become yours. And that's what we want our listeners and watchers to do, is become their own moves.
Find George and his teaching at successandvulnerability.com.
Call in your questions to the 4Play question voicemail. Dial 833-MY-4PLAY. That's 833-MY-4PLAY. And we'll use the questions for our mailbag episodes. All content is for entertainment purposes only and should not be considered as a substitute for therapy by a licensed clinician or as medical advice from a doctor. This podcast is copyrighted by 4Play Media.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.